You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. Here in the, let's see, what are we going to call this, Dave? Is this maybe the aquarium? Is that what it should be?
Oh, the fish tank? You're saying
the fish tank. We're out of the broom closet.
There are windows on almost 85% of this room. Well, cloudy out, and it's an alleyway in New York City.
Between buildings. But it's as natural light as we've ever seen here on Extra Time Radio. So
it's a very Spider-Man set.
It is. It is. It's quite nice. We've got the exposed brick in the background. We've got a big show for you today as well. The reason we're in a new room and, look, we're looking for a new home is that our office here at MLSsoccer.com, the digital office, is moving. We may stick around these parts for a little while, but you know, I'm a little sad if this has been if we're going to say goodbye to the broom closet. I got to say that. But the aquarium's fine, and I'm sure we'll find a good home here on out. We've got a bunch to talk about. The expansion draft went down earlier this week. The trade window opened. Things were going down with that, of course. There's some rumors. There's always rumors. We'll also talk about new head coaches. One is brand new. That's Kurt Anolfo, promoted from LA Galaxy 2 head coach to LA Galaxy head coach. And then Pablo Mastroeni, our guy, got a 3-year extension. So we'll discuss all that. And then we'll go to the mailbag. But first, the expansion draft. And for those of you that didn't watch this thing live, and we were able to put it on live this year, it was a little different from years past. It used to just be a conference call, and now we're switching things up here, apparently. MLS is going a little bit high-tech with things. 10 picks in this one instead of 20 as in previous rounds. Basically, teams used to get 10 choices, and only 2 players could be taken from each team. Well, this year, each team got 5 choices. That'd be Atlanta United, Minnesota United, of course. And once a player was picked from a certain team, that team was out. So you couldn't go raid the coffers, so to speak, Dave. Atlanta had the first pick. They took Donny Toya. They eventually traded him. Minnesota took Chris Duvall from the Red Bulls. They eventually traded him. Zach Lloyd went off. Colin Warner went off. Irwin went off. Then he got traded. Mohamed Saeed got taken. Mikey Ambrose, Jeff Atanella, Alec Khan, Femi Hollinger-Jansen. The theme here, defensive picks, which I saw coming because the pool was much deeper on that side, and value picks, which makes sense on the defensive side. You didn't want to take guys that had too much of a salary, too much to eat at this time. Looking at this big list, and we'll go through it a little bit more in a second with more detail, what are your takeaways? Who do you think won?
Who do I think won?
I know it's hard to say that. Because
I guess
we're
Minnesota
so far
won,
away.
But that's because Atlanta already has more of a team established, so they weren't drafting starters. Colin Warner, Mohamed Saeed are guys that are going to play for you most likely. Then they go and trade Chris Duvall, or did we not get to that part? Is that spoilers?
Yeah, we got it. Yeah, Chris Duvall, yeah. It's been.
I didn't want to spoil the surprise for people listening.
Chris Duvall taken, and the reason why these guys are taken 1 and 2 overall is because you got to grab them off the board because you have prearranged trades with other teams already made. So you got to snatch him up. Donny Toya, Atlanta United take him right off the top. Then they trade him later in the day to Orlando for the number 8 pick in the Super Draft. That means they now have the number 2 selection in the Super Draft and the number 8, and they can either use those as bargaining chips in future trades or go out and get some players. You'll remember that Paul McDonough had some luck in the Super Draft. Kyle Larin, for instance, from him on that one. Then Duvall, Minnesota take him. They flip him to Montreal for Johan Venegas. And a lot of people, especially in Minnesota, are saying, this looks like a great deal.
I think so too. I agree. I think Venegas, I really liked Venegas when he came over with Montreal at first. Then he kind of fell off to the wayside.
Yeah, was in and out. I think he had some injuries. He didn't necessarily fit with the counterattack, especially when Damo Duro is there.
And I agree with what Doyle said, is I think he can play centrally. So I don't think he fit on the wing, and that's how they kind of wanted him to play. He had a couple opportunities to play underneath at times. So I think he'll fit this team because I think he's a player that, one, needs a couple more minutes. There's going to be probably less pressure for starting spots on Minnesota than there were on Montreal. And two, I think he's a guy that can kind of play centrally for you. Listen, we know he scored against the U.S. national team
playing
in that qualifier.
Playing as a lone striker, basically.
Which was
a number
bizarre.
It was a weird
But showed
experiment.
His quality.
Yeah.
Showed his ability. So I think I like that move for Minnesota. I like also finally getting a couple of staples to build around. Like
right.
You can't just only get value picks. At some point, you need someone to be like, this is what
we're
putting the value around.
Quality in there as well. And there had been some consternation, let's call it, up in the Twin Cities because Minnesota United had gotten off to a slow start, especially, as you said, in comparison to Atlanta, who are out there signing DPs, who are rooting around South America for international caliber players, who had gone out and gotten Kenwin Jones ahead of time, who have Brad Guzan rumored to be coming into them. They certainly have the pizzazz. They certainly have the name value. But, Dave, I think Minnesota are kind of embarking now on their own journey. They had waited for Adrian Heath. They finally got him. They went to scout South America. I think we can expect some signings to come out of that as well. Now they're trying to navigate the reentry draft, the super draft, maybe some discovery signings, maybe pull off some trades with all the different allocation and other assets they have. So Minnesota fans, I guess what I'm saying is relax for now. Just wait and see, because I think this week is going to be a big one for them, and then the upcoming weeks will be as well. How do you feel about Colin Warner and Mohamed Saeed? Because these are the two they took, Minnesota did, with the second and third picks. I think they're guys they'll hold on to. I think Warner is a guy who was one of the few bright spots in Houston last year. There weren't a ton, but he's probably a guy who can, if not start for you at the six, can be a really, really good backup there and maeby even at the number eight. And I think Mohamed Saeed can start at the number eight as well. He's more of that kind of like ball circulation midfielder. But you have a little bit of a foundation built there.
Well, I don't know if you remember, Andrew, but on Monday I put Mohamed Saeed on my list of guys I would take. I like him.
I'd heard the name somewhere.
Yeah, you've heard of him before. Yeah. Well, I was actually the Opta analyst for Columbus Crew in his first year, SC. And
don't
think he's a guy.
That, SC.
I think he's a guy who can play. I think he's clean on the ball. I think he has a good first touch. I think he sees the game pretty well. He's not an off the charts athlete, so that's something that's going to limit you at times. And he doesn't beat guys off the dribble. That's not the type of player he is. But in moments when Will Trapp was out and he played alongside Chani, I thought he was a successful MLS player. So for what you're looking at from this list of guys that you're getting, I would agree that I think he's a starter for Minnesota if Venegas is one as well. Now you're starting to put together a midfield. And I would say Warner, I think I agree with you that he's a either borderline starter, probably guy off the bench, but he could be a guy where you look at it and you say, okay, we have him. If we put resources into that position, he could be a great player off the bench. If we don't, we think he can cover that ground for us a little bit until we find someone else or to prove that he can be the starter.
Right.
But he's a guy who has started in MLS in Montreal, in Toronto, in Houston, and proved that he can play in this league.
He definitely can.
I also have a Colin Warner TFC jersey.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, TFC?
He's my guy, yeah.
He's been Montreal, RSL. Colin Warner's, he's seen some things in MLS. Do we think that Adrian Heath, because I'm like, as you're talking here, I'm kind of going through mock lineups in my head, and I'm thinking about what Adrian did in Orlando, and a 4-2-3-1, which really is kind of the lineup du jour in MLS right now. Is popping into my brain, and we'll talk about Christian Ramirez in just a second. Maybe Christian Ramirez is that striker. Maybe Venegas is the guy in behind who, kind of like Kaká, is not a traditional number 10. He's more of a second striker.
You did it. You compared Kaká to Johan Venegas in this episode.
I found a way to do that.
I was waiting for that.
And then you got the two wings, which I'm not sure that we really have right now for them. And then you've got those two midfielders back there, which Mohamed Saeed certainly fits into that role as well, as does Colin Warner. Maybe that's where they're going. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. Jeff Atanella, picked fourth by Minnesota United. I really thought that RSL goalkeeper, by the way, for those of you who don't know. I know there were some like blank looks out there when a couple of these guys got picked. Backup for RSL, a guy a lot of people thought had starting potential, but Nick Raimondo's in front of you. So, what are you going to do? Some rumors that he might be moved. But I think they would be fine with either having him as a possible starter, depending on what happens in the rest of the window here, or as a backup. But I think you watch out for maybe a deal getting done with him. And then Femi Hollinger-Jansen from New England, who played, 273 minutes but had two goals, was very active when he was in there.
I like him.
It's not a Patrick Mullins pick like NYCFC had, where you're like, hey, this guy has some pedigree, some track record. But he kind of fits the blue-collar, upward mobile like potential side that Minnesota seemed to be looking
same
for.
As Mullins, he came from New England because they just have a logjam at those attacking positions. I think he would have played more minutes than that if he didn't play for New England this year. I just think they have so many players on that wing and at center forward. There wasn't any room for him. I don't think he's a guy that you want. I don't think Minnesota fans are going to go out and buy his jersey tomorrow. Right. But I think he's a guy that will hang around.
But a hyphen jersey?
Yeah.
I mean,
special.
You got to get those hyphen jerseys
but
when you can.
But when you look at NYCFC's picks, what, you had Tony Taylor. You had, like you said, Patrick Mullins,
Mack. Tony Taylor had some moments this year. He was injured for a lot of time, but he got you 3 or 4 goals.
Right. I think between that Taylor and Mullins category, I think Hollinger Jansen could be a guy that will be on the roster for a few years.
Yeah, could be a bench guy, could be a spark guy off the bench, you know, maybe pushing and start if need comes.
But like you said, they have – the point of this was you only get 5 expansion picks because you have other ways to go about building your team. Minnesota now has to go to work. They could sign free agents. They have money. They can go out and sign some DPs. They can use the TAM money that they have. I think we're going to see it come together pretty quickly over the next few weeks.
Yeah, it kind of has to because the season is 4 months away. Let's talk about Atlanta United's haul here. We mentioned Donny Toya. They moved him on, got that draft pick. Then they went Zach Lloyd out of Dallas at 2. Clint Irwin, as I said, with their 3rd pick, they immediately flipped him back to Toronto for Mark Bloom and some GAM. Mark Bloom, by the way, a Marietta, Georgia guy who can play right back, has had some success in this league doing that, had kind of gotten pushed out of that position, though, with Steven Betisher coming in with Toronto. Also had some injuries as well that held him back. And then Mikey Ambrose, taken 4th overall from Orlando. That was one that very few people had any information
about. We now
about.
Will begin a 45-minute breakdown of Mikey Ambrose's game here.
Dude, I'll throw
time
it down.
Radio.
I'll give it to you. I had it. Kalen Carr in this very room. We're looking through the aquarium here. Kalen Carr and Russ Thaler blanked hard on that one, and thankfully for me, I'm a super nerd, so I had an idea.
Let me ask you this question then, expansion draft expert. Explain the Zach Lloyd move to me.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, look, he had concussion problems last year, right? A lot of them.
That's not the type of injury that you just throw him in a tank.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Better.
Great 1v1 defender, veteran presence, and we've seen with the signing of Jeff Larinowicz through free agency, which, by the way, we'll break down all the free agents in the second segment, that they're looking and Michael Parkhurst, they're looking for what's the right way to say this? They're looking for players who can be the first mates on the ship in this expansion journey, so to speak. Guys who have been there before, guys who have experienced, guys who can take everybody else under their wing, whether that player be a young, talented star, like a homegrown player that we see in Atlanta, or maybe the, you know, the Oscar Romeros or Villalbas of the world, and say, this is how it works in MLS. This is how the training goes. This is best practice as far as travel. This is who these players you're playing against are because you probably have no idea. This is how leadership works. We are the leaders. We're the ones who set the tone. And I think Zach Lloyd could be that guy. I'm with you, though. The injuries.
I mean, you don't have to convince me that the Zach Lloyd is a good pickup for Atlanta United.
But
the healthy Zach Lloyd.
Right.
And
also, does he really fit next to
Michael Parker?
Yeah, does he? I don't
so
think
now
so.
The question is he a right back for you? Which
right.
He has the potential to play. But I agree with you that you have – it's a lot of money for a guy who may not be healthy. And then if he is healthy, is an experienced, talented MLS defender who probably is not an ideal fit with the one guy that you have already locked into your back line.
Which is maybe then he's the backup there behind Parkhurst. Or, I mean, I've been thinking, is there a possibility we see a 3-man back line?
Because if you're going to go 3-man back line, those two are excellent for that because they're mobile, they read the game well, they can challenge in the air, but they can move. I would agree with that. Then we got to start seeing some wing backs, though, because it seems like they went out and got 2 DP wingers. So unless it's
right.
– I don't really know how they fit into a 3-man back line.
I think Romero may be more of a central player.
No, but I'm saying –
no, that's not official yet, by the way.
But
people,
I'm saying
so
the 2 they already signed are wingers.
Villalba and
– Almiron.
Yeah.
So those guys aren't going to play in the Mauro Betashore, you know, wing back positions. So if you're looking at a 3-man back line, where do they fit in? Are they playing in a tight 3 attacking in front of one
holding
midfielder?
And they want to be wide? I mean, we're just confusing ourselves here. It's still yet to be seen because there's a lot of roster building left for both these teams. We mentioned Mikey Ambrose. You probably don't know who Mikey Ambrose is. And by you, I don't mean Dave because Dave's a USL expert here. Mikey Ambrose came out of Maryland. He left early. He decided he wanted to sign with a USL club. He went to the Austin Aztecs. He bounced around a little bit. Ended up in Orlando. Of course, the Aztecs going from Austin to Orlando. So Paul McDonough, the VP of soccer ops there in Atlanta, very familiar with him. And this one smells to me like, hey, I saw a kid with potential that's going to go on my reserve roster, because remember in MLS you have the senior, supplemental, and reserve rosters, and we're going to take a flyer on him. We think he can be more. We're betting on his future. I think that's what's going on with Mikey Ambrose. That one we'll know about down the line. Alec Kahn was their fifth pick, backup goalkeeper for Sporting Kansas City, who, by the way, is Kansas City, signed to an extension earlier in the day on Tuesday. Then he got grabbed. A lot of people said, hey, that probably means Alec Kahn's on his way back to Kansas City. Not true. Atlanta just wanted him. Decatur native, by the way, another Georgian native. But they just wanted him, and he's happy to be going home. So that's big for him on that side. So, in the end, I think a good haul for both of these teams from their five picks. Remember, because they didn't get 10, they also got a big chunk of allocation money that normally would have been given to the teams who had players selected. So, if your team got a player selected, also remember, your team got allocation money to compensate that loss. We've been talking a lot about Oscar Romero, so let's just dive into that, Dave. He is a 24-year-old. He's an attacking midfielder, winger type. He's Paraguayan. Was at Cerro Porteño, I think, when Tata was there, or at least Tata was familiar with him. Then he went to Racing in Argentina. Jeff Carlisle out over at ESPN is reporting that this thing is close to being done, or they're working on it. It would be a DP signing. It would very obviously right now be the third designated player signing for them. And Jeff is saying that there's a fee in the, you know, multi-millions in that 6 to 8 region. He's also reporting that the salary for Oscar Romero would be $2 million a year. What do we make of this? This is ambitious. This is, to me, when you combine it with Villalba and Almiron, a play for the future and the present. If these guys perform with Tata, and if anybody's going to get the best out of them, I would think it would be a guy like Tata. And it speaks a lot to, you know, what he's provided, that they can recruit guys or at least even plausibly speak to guys like this. And then maybe you sell them on down the line and you just start feeding that allocation money into your team. And that's how you improve it long term. But they're not afraid to spend.
No, absolutely not. I think this goes in the Almiron, you know, similar, that these are guys that European teams are looking at as potential signings, that it's a big money MLS move for a young player in their prime in the attacking part of the field. And so I think it's similar to that move. So, like, I think it's a great move for the player to be in this league. I don't know. I don't really know how they're going to play yet, so I don't know how it fits. I mean, if you have three DPs and you're attacking three in, you know, a 4-2-3-1, with Kenwyn Jones in front of them, that sounds pretty incredible to me. I kind of thought they might spend that money on a central midfielder. Guardado has been the conversation. Whether or not it's him.
Well, Retuiz now makes a lot of sense in this case, right? Because he's a straight-up holding guy. Like, he could go box-to-box, but he could also play center back. He's good in the air. He's got that good big switch. He makes a lot of sense now as far as just defensive midfield. Because you would think if these are the four – like I said, Romero's not done. It's not official. And Sam Stashkill of MLSsoccer.com is reporting today that RSL have those discovery rights. So Atlanta would have to make a deal with RSL, although he's also reporting that RSL will not offer. So then it goes to the league rules, and it's just $50K in GAM to get the deal done. You've got to have a base behind them. You have to have, I think, if those are your four, two either holding or predominantly holding midfielders.
But can you put together a strong enough base with that much of your salary going towards the front four? Is the question. And I think Guardado made sense because he can get involved in the attack and he covers a ton of ground, but he also has defensive responsibilities both at PSV and at Mexico that he's shown capable of dealing with, besides the fact that he's versatile. So he's not coming, but that doesn't mean there aren't similar players that you can go out and get that do similar things. I wonder, listen, I don't want to question going out and spending too much money in the attack, because that's what we want to see. 100%. We want three young Latin DPs coming in that are hungry, that have shown the ability to play for their national teams, that have been successful in their clubs, go and play in MLS. So I'm not
saying this is my stepping stone. And I'm okay with MLS being a stepping stone for these guys, because let's get that straight.
I mean, Villalba, Freddy Montero was unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. Villalba, Almiron, and Romero are not coming here to spend 15 years in MLS. They're coming here to advance their career. And I would argue all of them had at least – as much hype as Freddy Montero, if not far more.
Yeah.
Because two of the three are regular internationals for Paraguay.
So I also, by the way, I don't think he managed him at Porteño, but I think he managed Romero at Paraguay for the Paraguayan national team.
But he knows
him
of course.
Very well.
Yes, yes.
So I don't know what the full team's going to look like. I think he's a talent that I would love to see in MLS. I think what they're doing is incredible. I think he's a good creative player. Neither of the players they signed are probably going to play centrally, so that's where he would most likely slot in as a central attacking midfielder or second striker, similar to what you see from Giovanni Dos Santos.
Right.
So I think it fits together well. It's just a matter of what they put together behind him. And they have a ton of GAM and TAM. They can go out. They got a free agent in Lorentowicz. You have to think there's a couple other guys that are that they're talking to, maybe coming in from outside the league.
And we'll talk about free agency in this next segment. I'm going to throw a name out there right now and just tease it, DeMarcus Beasley. We'll get to that in just a little bit, though.
At holding midfield? No,
not at holding midfielder. Come on now. Minnesota United, of course, exciting things going on with them as well. It may not be the big-name players that their fans are looking for just yet, but they did break ground on the new stadium on Monday, and it is really sweet. All the new renderings are awesome. The roof looks really cool. The whole area around it looks really cool. Looks like a great little venue for them. There's also some rumors going around them. They have the top spot in the allocation should Brad Guzan come in, which we're expecting, by the way. I mean, if you haven't heard about that one, we kind of skipped over it. It looks like this is going to get done. We mentioned on the last show, where there's smoke, there's fire. Nothing official. Keep your eye close to that one. But Christian Ramirez also looks like it has a good chance of getting done for Minnesota as well. That would be a big signing.
Yeah.
Both to acknowledge their history, because he's been their best player for the last 3 years, but also to acknowledge their future, because I think he's a guy that if you're Adrian Heath, you look at and you say, I can make this guy into a Dom Dwyer type, but maybe even more productive.
Well, Kyle Larin.
Yeah, or Kyle Larin. Yeah. He's not the same age. He's 25 right now, but he's had three incredible seasons of goal scoring, and Liga MX teams were definitely interested in him, and that's kind of why the negotiations have been slow going.
Yeah, and he's a guy I think that they have to sign, because right now they don't have an identity, they don't have a star, and he has that potential as well as knowing the area, knowing the fan base. And I think he's going to be very good in MLS. I don't have any worries about giving him money. I've heard some people be like, well, he did it in NASL. Can he do it in MLS? I have seen him play. I believe he can. So I think he's worth giving him what he needs to make sure he's on your team. They've already signed two guys up from their NASL team. So that gives
you
a little bit of an identity, though, because that's one of the issues. No matter what Atlanta does, the reality of it is there's going to be 28 guys on a team that have never played together before. There's nothing you can do about that.
And haven't been in the market either. It's a blank slate. It's completely blank.
And I don't know that Orlando did the best job of moving from USL into MLS and keeping that team together, because that was supposed to be their advantage over NYCFC. Obviously, neither team made the playoffs in the first year. Orlando finished higher. But they were doing it differently. They have young players that they're still bringing through. Their academy's more established. So Minnesota has that opportunity to do that here. I think he's a necessary player that they have to lock down.
Yeah, we'll see what happens to that. One to follow. Some other things to watch with Minnesota. You mentioned those two outside backs they brought in. They also traded for Joseph Greenspan, who you'll remember the Rapids drafted, but then he couldn't play because he had commitments to the Navy. That's where he went to
college.
But he did
play.
He did briefly. He got that little, like, you know, I don't know what they would call it, the Navy calls it, but
furlough?
They let him, for whatever it was. They let him play for a little while, then he went back. But apparently he's free to do what he wants now. Minnesota have traded for his rights. He's a very, very big central defender, dominant in the air, a lot of hype about him coming out saying, hey, you know, there's some question marks about this Navy stuff, but he could be a very good player in this league. They've got him. Also rumors that Tim Ream wants to come back to MLS from Fulham. As I said, if Guzan goes to Atlanta, they'll have the number one spot in the allocation order, which Ream would have to come through to get back to the league. Do you like Tim Ream in Minnesota? Do you like Tim Ream as an MLS player?
Yeah, I do. I mean, we remember what he did with Red Bulls. He's only gone over and gotten better. He's played in gritty situations.
Yeah,
I mean, the championship
is
just – it's all at war at times. And he's played well. He's won player of the year for a few of his teams. He's played at fullback and at center back. So he gives you versatility that you bring him in on a blank slate. You end up finding someone.
But you can't sign this guy, go out in the allocation order and pay him the money it would take to get him in and play him at outside back.
But if
right?
you end up
you
in
have,
a
– he's got to be a center back.
But you end up in a situation where you bring guys in and you realize that you have another asset at center back. You can move him around if you need
could
to.
You could if you wanted to.
But I agree with you that you're paying him to be a center back.
And you're paying him to be the guy that plays out of the back.
And he's good on the ball. He's fantastic on the ball.
Right.
He was at Red Bull in his first year in the league. He's only going to be better now. Greenspan's never played at this level. We don't know that Greenspan's the starter.
Right.
They could still go out. They're still going to go out and get 20 more players.
There's
so we
so
have
much
no
left
idea.
To do.
But I think that Tim Ream, I don't know that he's Lawrence Simon good, but I think he comes in and he's a top 10 MLS center back, and that's a pretty good place to start for a team, especially a team that isn't bringing in three DPs at the attacking roles. They need to be able to defend when they come in next year, and I think he's a guy that knows how to do it, and a guy who can get back in the U.S. national team conversation if he does come here and play successful, which is a nice bump for a new franchise.
Certainly is. Speaking of the national team, there's some other rumors going around with some players, maybe Joe Corona to L.A. We'll talk about that when we come back, but also free agency and a new head coach in L.A., Kurt Anolfo, taking over from Bruce Arena. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions. It might be over soon.
Soccer.com and SiriusXMC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss, here in the aquarium or whatever it is we're calling this new room we're hanging out with on this Thursday or Friday if you're listening
to
Sirius. Yes, the fish tank, but that is also an aquarium.
No.
But I guess other things can go
right.
in aquarium.
Yes. You can use the term aquarium for the center that houses all of the fish, or you're right.
We've got
large aquarium.
Yes,
I think this isn't fancy enough to be like Thierry Henry had.
We've got the big square window. I mean, this is like a 6 foot long window.
Thierry Henry had aquariums in his apartment.
Right.
This is like a fish tank.
Okay, we're stuck in here. We're still having fun. It's all good. Let's talk a little bit LA Galaxy before we get to the free agents that are out there and available.
We never talk about them, so this is good. I'm
glad. It's kind of a, you know, you should probably be happy that every now and then we sprinkle in a little Galaxy content. Kurt Anolfo, named the LA Galaxy head coach. That's something that we've basically known was going to go down for a while now. The writing was on the wall. You could see sort of a philosophical change coming for the Galaxy, but he takes over from LA Galaxy 2, where he was the manager for a while. Had also managed NMLS head coach experience at Kansas City back when they were the Wizards. Teams went to the playoffs.
Were you there when he was there?
I was.
What was your vibe off?
At that time, it was like a workmanlike approach, and the style of play wasn't pretty. But then again, the Wizards didn't exactly have the personnel to go out there and play beautifully. It was a little bit of a different era, I would say, in that franchise's history. They were playing at Community America Ballpark. It was not glamorous at that time, let's say. And then he went to DC United, and it was a terrible team. They were just horrible. And he got fired pretty quickly from there, and that's when Ben Olsen took over. So, went to L.A.
So what we could tell you right now is whoever's the next L.A. Galaxy coach will be there for a while.
Yeah, that's that's one way of looking at it there. Kurt Anolfo in, and Pete Vahenas promoted to general manager. So no longer will you have the Bruce Arena situation where he wore both hats. There's a little bit more of a, and I don't think teamwork is the right word, but there's more of a split of duties and decision-making that has occurred at the Galaxy. There's some people out there reporting, Grant Wall among them, that there's some cost-cutting going on for LA, that they're not going to spend as much as they did in years past. And I think that's maybe fair to say on the upper echelon DP front, whereas, you know, yeah, they have Giovanni Dos Santos and they're paying him an awful lot of money, but it's probably not going to be the case that they start to bring in the Robbie Keens, the Steven Gerrards, the Frank Lampards, the Andrea Pirlos of the world, maybe go a little bit younger.
But this is what the Red Bulls just did.
Right.
The Red Bulls said, we're going to go cost-cutting, but then they started a USL team that they paid for, and they built out their academy. There's still money there. It's just not being spent on one dude to play for a year and a half. It's being spent on a program and a system to try and produce quality players. LA Galaxy started this idea. I mean, they were the ones who really went hard on USL and on the academy. And both Kurt Anolfo and Peter Vahenas are guys that helped start that, have coached in it, know those players, know the ability that's there.
By the way, Kurt Anolfo's son, Christian Anolfo, went through that academy structure, graduated from the LA Galaxy High School, which was another big investment by the club, and played for LA Galaxy 2 under his father. So if anybody understands start to finish this developmental pipeline, it's Kurt Anolfo. And it's Peter Vahenas. They're the ones that built the thing.
So that's where the money is, though.
Right.
And I think if you're LA, it's not saying, like, we don't want to spend anymore. I think it's like, we've spent a lot on this. We need to see returns for it.
Right. Where's our return on investment?
We need to start selling guys, or we need to start having our team be made up of these guys. You have Daniel Steris.
Daniel Stairs came through. Dave Romney came through.
Yeah.
But neither of those guys are really academy guys.
Right.
And, of course,
Zardes is not
as. The Mindiolas of the worlds and the McBeans and
Sordo.
The Villarreals and the Sordos, they were there before this USL team came into being. And they've contributed a little bit. But I think there's also an element of give those kids a chance at the first team level. Because for everything good you can say about Bruce, and this is still a good thing, he was a win now guy. No doubt about it. He wanted a veteran roster in large part that he could win with. And even if they weren't veteran, he's not going to stick a player on the field that's not ready for it necessarily and that's going to go through a ton of growing pains. Once he came to places of trust with Mindiola, who got some minutes this last year, at times with McBean during his career, sometimes with Villarreal, he would play those guys.
And the surprising thing is normally in MLS, you don't really have a choice because of the way rosters are constructed that at some point things get thin. You got to play a kid. The Red Bulls had that. They did it with Mule. He came through for them. It happened with Fagundes for the Revs years ago. Harry Shipp in Chicago. Like, at some point, normally that happens. And to Arena's credit, he consistently finds veterans on the cheap, out of a contract, out of Europe, out of South America.
McGee, Laurentiis.
Who want to come play for him. Who want to come back to the U.S. Who don't have a deal. Whatever it is.
Like Jet even.
That he was able to put into those situations. So it never really happened.
This whole thing with Anolfo and the new head coach of the Galaxy, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of gone under the radar in MLS news. And I know that's because there's the expansion
for
draft.
For L.A.
And there's like, you know, Atlanta's making big moves and they've got rumors flying around them. That's weird to me, though, because L.A., to me, still remains one of, if not the best job in MLS.
I think it's the best job in MLS.
Number one.
Yeah. Because of the structure you have, the obvious caring and impact from the ownership, the steady hand above you in Chris Klein, who's been there for a while, the market, and the name. I mean, Kurt Anolfo walks into a room with a prospective DP. He doesn't carry the same sway as Bruce Arena does. But the LA Galaxy name still does.
Right.
And I think that is a bargaining chip.
He doesn't have to explain who the Galaxy are. He's not, hey, we're here. This is what we do. This is what we are.
Yeah.
David Beckham, in large part, did that job for him. The fact that they won a bunch of titles did that job
Robbie
for them.
Robbie Keane has done that
Landon
for
Donovan.
Them. Donovan. Yeah. So I think that still
Steven
exists.
Steven Gerrard, right.
That still exists. If I'm an LA Galaxy fan, I think I'm watching this and saying, I would ask if you'd be happy with what happened to the Red Bulls, which is you had a flashier team come into town that took a lot of the spotlights, and you've been more successful on the field since that's happened, but you're not the prime time show anymore.
Right.
And I'm curious to see what happens to LA. This Kurt Anolfo signing is a smart, steady signing. It isn't.
It's got a little bit of – now, look, I know Oscar Pareja had gotten head coaching experience in Colorado, but it's got a little bit of that. A guy who
– Jesse Marsh?
Who knows – well, I don't even think Jesse Marsh can apply on there. Because Jesse Marsh – it wasn't like Jesse Marsh knew all the kids in the Red Bulls Academy.
Oh,
it's not like he was presence. I mean, Oscar Pareja was able to play kids like – Kellen Acosta, because he knew them since he was 12.
Brought Victor Ulloa back from Mexico and said, I know you.
Belief in them, and that's what Kurt Anolfo is going to have with these kids that have come up to the academy. He knows them. He's played them in professional matches. He's won games with them in professional matches, and he's not a tactical guy who's going to come in at this point in his career and, I don't think, lock it down and play like 10 men behind the ball. Those LA Galaxy 2 teams were swashbuckling. And I know it was a little bit different because they were doing it for development, but they also wanted to win. Those teams went out and scored goals, and you got to hope that he can bring that sort of style over to the Galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, Matt has said on this show that he feels promising about the LA Galaxy. I think that the roster is good to compete in MLS next year, but is that enough with LAFC coming?
Right.
Is being a top 4 team.
Two DP spots open.
Right. Is being a top 4 team in the West. Do they go out and get someone, okay, you say you want to get, do you want to get cheaper or do you want to get younger? Because getting younger isn't cheaper. It's just that you're getting more return for that
but
value.
Let's say Oscar Romero's salary is correct. It's $2 million. I think that's well within the range of, yes, that's more, the cost cutting is happening, but we can afford that. That's not a big deal for us. If it's the right player, sure. LA Galaxy can go spend that. I just don't think they're going to spend it on guys with no ROI, like a Gerrard, who you're just giving $10 million, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's out the window now.
Good.
But you could go look at investments, or you could go look at young players. You could go look at Piatti types, who you can hold on to for 3, 4, 5 years, might be best 11 type players, or you go get Jermaine Jones. Because, look, they pulled a trade-off with the Rapids the other day. We saw Jermaine hanging out of the Lakers games with Vinas and Chris Klein. They pull off a trade, two draft picks to get the rights to Jermaine Jones. That's important to know because they did not trade for him. He's not under contract right now. But they have his rights, and they're negotiating with him. Jermaine Jones to L.A., I have sold myself on it, and I'm, like, all in, hopeful, very, very hopeful. But I also know there's a huge trapdoor just waiting to, like, drop me down to the depths. What do you make of it?
Outside of the injuries, I wouldn't have worries because the whole, like, he's in L.A. with the celebrities and stuff, I think he'll be fine with that.
And his family. That's the important part. His family.
Yeah, so he'll be great with it. He has to fly less.
He's been injured a lot, but the dude has flown.
Yeah.
He's taken an extra, like, two or three flights every week just to.
He also throws his body around pretty heavily.
You're right.
And
no, he's
not exactly young at this point.
Like, the injuries are a concern. Let's just say right now that we're operating from a point. Let's just say we think that he's going to get 20 starts next year if he signs. He's on grass. He's in L.A. They can pick and choose the games he plays. Do not play the guy in
turf. It's warmer.
It's warmer. He's with his family, so he's happier, and he doesn't have to travel as much. There's not as much wear and tear. He basically spent an entire year rehabbing in 2016. Yeah. So
he may actually have less commitment to national team because Bruce won't lean on him as heavily as Jurgen did. Like, bringing him in when he's injured.
All the time.
Even just to take a look at him. That's right. Another flight you're talking about. My thing is, what is Jermaine Jones? Jermaine Jones at Schalke was a, like, class-holding defensive midfielder. Jermaine Jones hasn't played that in at least 3 years. At least, if not more. So I don't know what he is anymore.
I don't think you pay him. I mean, I don't think you go get him and pay him to be a D-mid, right?
So what are you paying him to be? Next to another mid?
The most dynamic player on the field.
But
when he's healthy,
isn't
he's the
Giovanni
best player
Dos Santos the most dynamic player on
nope.
your field?
I think Jermaine Jones is more dynamic.
So is he your number 10?
Maybe.
So possibly. If he's your number 10, are we back into the same issue of Dos Santos isn't a winger and he's not a true forward?
Yeah, you are. But look, here's the way I would do it.
So how does
I know
it
this
fit?
Is tough. I know this is tough. You got to rely on Jermaine to not always be Jermaine, but he can be at times. You play, what will it say? It's basically, it's kind of a 4-4-2, but Giovanni gets to go where he wants. Zardes up top in the middle. You got to go find another defensive midfielder.
You got to go find someone who can do what Michael Bradley never figured out how to do. And Michael Bradley's not a true.
Juninho.
Okay, but then Juninho has to figure out how to do that. And I'm not saying he can't. Juninho's phenomenal player in his prime would be a great signing.
I say the Juninho, by the way, folks, because it's rumored that he wants to come back. That's the word on the street. Club Tijuana not working out for him. He'd like to come back to MLS. But it'd be hard for the Galaxy to get him. They'd have to go through the allocation order, and we know that's not easy. You have to give something up to do that. You got Sebastian Legette. Where do you put him? I don't know. I think if you can – maybe you play him at a 10, and maybe that means Giovanni's on a wing. I don't like that solution, but I think if the three guys pushing forward are Jones, Giovanni, and Zardes, that's really, really good. On the other wing, maybe you get another DP, and it's Legette and a real holding midfielder next to him behind them. It's a puzzle they're trying to figure out,
yeah.
And I fully understand that it's super complicated.
I just find it tough that Jones is one of the early pieces. I mean, you have to build around him because of who he is. My thing is just watching him play. I think when you say you have to be Jermaine sometimes, the license he was given in New England
what makes
and
Jermaine
Colorado.
Jermaine is because he can be Jermaine all the time. Is that
and,
what you're
and the license right. he's been given over the last 3 years, I think for him, watching him with Colorado in the playoffs, it was like, this is the way this guy sees the game now and sees his role. Maybe he could tone that back down. I don't know. Maybe he won't be healthy enough that it won't matter. In some games, he's Jermaine. In other games, he's not there. And that's how
you don't play him.
And that's how you figure that out. Yeah. I don't know, but you've got a decent spot at center back right now with Yelly Van Dam, and I still think AJ De La Garza is a great player in this league.
I do too.
Manny Boateng's a piece. I'm not as sold as Matt Doyle is on him
yep,
to be a full-time starter. You have two DPs.
If he played RSL every game, he could be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, that might be what's in the cards. Yeah. Hey, you have two DPs. You have good young players. You have Giovanni Dos Santos. Zardes is going to be huge next year.
I agree.
Coming back fully healthy.
Has to be.
When he got injured, it was the best he was playing in his career. And he's going to have a shot to prove to Bruce Arena that he deserves to get back into the U.S. national team as well. Bruce obviously knows him fairly well.
Sebastian Legette, I think, same boat.
Yeah, Legette probably has a better shot right now because Zardes, he won't play him at forward. Is Zardes a winger on the national team? Legette, Bruce got him to play his best soccer of his career. So it should be interesting, but Jermaine Jones is a puzzle.
He is a puzzle.
Giovanni Dos Santos is kind of a puzzle. You end up with two of those.
Two puzzles trying to figure it out in L.A. Should be fun to see him try to fit those pieces together. Anibal Cello, we've talked about him. He got signed to Dallas. They finished that one off. A left back to come in. Also, Fernando Clavijo saying, Castillo's replacement at left midfield is done as well. So big moves from Dallas. Good stuff happening for them. We'll see what goes down with them as well. Some moves on the back end there. Greg Garza rumored to perhaps be coming back to MLS. That's good news for some U.S. national team fans. He's had a tough time the last couple of years down there. He's had injuries with his hip. He's had a concussion. Crew SC have his rights. Apparently on their end, no real interest, but other teams do. Left backs, not easy to find, but he's got to be healthy to go out and sign him. Joe Corona apparently had interest to come back to MLS. That's not going to happen, it seems. A bunch of other rumors floating around. Go check those out. Also, free agency going down right now. A big
deal.
Wait,
before we get there, how much do you have to spend on a guy like Garza for fullback?
Yeah, you can't spend too much, especially with his injury history. So, look, I think this is a flyer for him to just try to get his career back on track.
Yeah.
Because Mexico has those new regulations with, you know, foreigners and that sort of thing.
So he takes a deal, proves himself that he deserves a better deal.
Maybe short-term deal, something like that. Just to get things going again and try to get back to the national team. That's one thing he mentioned. He wants to get back in the national team. Let's talk about free agents right now, and we'll go into the second ever class for free agents in MLS. Of course, it's a little bit limited. You've got to be 28. You got to have 8 years of service. You have to have your option declined or be out of contract. But there are some good names on this list. One is off. We mentioned that. Jeff Florinowicz, who was a free agent last year, went to the LA Galaxy. This year, he goes to Atlanta United, moving and shaking, shaking and moving. What names jump off this list to you, Dave? Who do you like?
I mean, DeMarcus Beasley is the obvious one. He could stay at Houston, which they're saying they're in talks
to.
Was
a DP there. Yeah. So I don't think he'll get that in free agency.
No, he knows he won't, though. Yeah. But I think he still wants to play.
He definitely does.
He could go back to Chicago. Might be interesting for him, back towards home where he started his career. Obviously, Atlanta is a name that's going to come up.
If we're talking about wingbacks, you know, we're just throwing out that three-man back line.
You are throwing out that three-man back line.
My imagination is
running
wild. If
they play it, you get full credit. If they don't, I don't want to be associated.
Okay, I sweep it under the rug. He could just play left back in a back four, though, too.
Yeah, that's what he does. That's what he's good at. I think he would be a good addition there. Will Johnson's an interesting name because I think he's a guy who partially can still be a starter. The question is, can he find a spot to do it? And then you end up with Dama Duro, who I still think is a player that can play in MLS. I think he's still he's inconsistent, but he's talented. He scores goals.
Six and six this year, two in the playoffs. We saw his form there.
Yeah.
Can't teach speed.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, I think there's a good chance he'll be back in Montreal next year. We'll see about that. Let's see. Looking down the list, I mean, I got a cadre of right backs, Sean Franklin, Chance Myers, Corey Ash, veterans. I think it probably goes Franklin, Ash, Myers on the rankings.
Franklin's
there.
Still a good player in MLS, but he got paid a bunch, and it wasn't worth the salary cap hit, I think. So he's going to have to find a way to fit in a team that really needs that help. I mean, we just talked about fullback.
I'm really intrigued by Javi Mo.
Yeah.
Javi Mo wants more playing time. There's rumors on the Twitters right now that he's going to go to Dallas. I threw it out there in the column I wrote today that I think he should go to Dallas, that it's a match made in heaven. Mauro Diaz out without Achilles injury. He could fill in.
I think he would actually.
And you don't know how quickly Mauro can come back from that injury.
I think he actually would fill in cleaner than Mauro Rosales did as well.
Agreed.
Rosales is more of a winger. Fantastic set piece service. Javi Mo can still kind of move around the field more than Rosales can. Still covers a little bit of ground. Has that ability to float in and out of the lines. Loves that little cutback ball. The ball as he comes across the top of the 18 for a striker, Aruti, whoever it is, going back
right
the other way.
Culture, I feel like.
Yeah.
And he's got a chip on his shoulder.
And I think he's a guy who can accept the responsibility once Diaz does come back to still be a useful part of the team without having to be the guy.
Yeah, two Argentines. I think also Diaz, as I said, no guarantee he'll just come right back in and be his old self. So you got to take a flyer there. Some other names to look at. You've got Marvell Wynn at center back, David Horst. Both those guys played a lot of games. Marvell Wynn's like an 11 straight year starter in MLS. He is underrated in my opinion. Jacob Peterson, the answer. I expect him to be back with KC, but you never know. Marco Papa. Justin Mapp didn't work out last year. Mike McGee, former MVP. There's a lot of names here. A lot of stuff will be going down. Alan Gordon as well, by the way. LA Galaxy may be going to try to pull him back, but I know there's interest in him from other teams. So
yeah, but does he want to go anywhere? I mean, he's got to be able to get to the beach.
He's a SoCal guy, so we'll see what happens there. Hey, that's all for us here in this segment. We're going to be right back with a mailbag. Sounders, they had a parade.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
What you want? Childish Gambino leading us back in here. I'm Andrew Wiebe. With me, David Goss. Really, that's a great album, by the way, Dave. If you haven't listened to it, I don't think you have.
I have not listened to it.
You should go check it out. It's
well,
really
I have like
good.
2 weeks off now, so I'll listen to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, hey, that reminds me. We're going to have both of us a little bit of time off, much needed. I hesitate to say deserved. We'll be here on Monday. We'll do our normal thing. And then on that next Thursday through the holidays, you'll get kind of the backlog of interviews we did at MLS Cup, which I think are really good. Don't take backlog to be a negative here. You've got, what, Sapong and Rosenberry 1v1 together. You've got Andre
Not
Blake.
Not 1v1 together.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sasha Kljestan as well, and Swagadello. So it should be good stuff. We'll have some conversations around all that as well. The Sounders, they had a parade, man. They went all the way through downtown. They went to the Shadow of the Space Needle. Ozzie Alonso lifted the cup on stage. Brian Smetzer walked behind with the fans as they approached their final destination. Clint Dempsey channeled, he channeled his inner Clint Dempsey, and he said some slightly inappropriate stuff that you should go check out because it's pretty funny. Hurt Gomez crowd surfed. I mean, this was an incredible day, right?
That's what we live for. This is pretty awesome. No, this is what it's been now, right? Every time a team wins, it gets bigger and bigger. The cities get bigger and bigger, so it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and you couldn't let Portland one up you, right? I mean, if you're Seattle.
That's what's amazing. Like, Portland won it last year after Seattle tried to win it so many times. Seattle comes back, wins it the exact year after.
But I'm also hearing from Portland fans on Twitter that this is the only way they'd want Seattle to win the Cup, which, you know, that's well, like that's after the fact they're trying to justify this. Basically, that it was kind of ugly. And they didn't have any shots, and they did it on PKs, and it wasn't swashbuckling. It wasn't like they came into Toronto and just took on all comers and played beautiful soccer. They got the job done, but it wasn't like, you know, you're not bragging about your play. You got the cup though, so who cares?
I think you put a star on the jersey either way, and I don't think Seattle will really care.
They won't.
I think Seattle will argue that they've gone out and scored a lot of goals over the last 7 years.
Yeah, and you know what Clint Dempsey said. Portland, now you can't say shiitake. So let's move on to some other big news here in MLS, and it is really big news. It's on the expansion front. They came out today, MLS did, and unveiled the expansion process. They gave the timeline and the fee. As you know, December 2015, the league said, we want to go to 28 teams. Right now, there's for sure 23, and the 24th would be Miami, which they're still working on in 2017. We know that Atlanta will come in. We know that Minnesota United will come in. And then LAFC will come in, and then we'll see what happens with Miami. But they say they're making progress here. They set out in this kind of this timeline and kind of almost a rule book here for expansion for MLS, what you got to do. And you've got to basically submit a bunch of documents by different deadlines. You can get all the news at MLSsoccer.com. I don't think it's worth right now going into all the nitty-gritty, but you have to have things justifying your ownership, your stadium, your financial production, basically your business plan. And then there's a timeline here. They want teams 25 and 26 to begin play by the 2020 season. By is an important word there. That's not on, that's by. There'll be two new expansion teams doing that. They'll decide on those, it looks like, second or third quarter of 2017. And then two additional expansion teams will be announced at a later date. The fee they've set for 25 and 26 is $150 million. They say 27 and 28, that fee will be announced at a later date. They also give the 10 markets who are in the running, who have publicly expressed interest right now. That is Charlotte, Cincinnati, Detroit, Nashville, Raleigh, Durham, Sacramento, St. Louis, San Antonio, San Diego, and Tampa, St. Pete. Those are in alphabetical order, so please don't read into that in any way. What do you make of this, Dave? I mean, they're setting the rules out. They're saying this is how it's done, and that's some of the transparency I think some folks have asked for in the past, and also what's needed when you do have 10 different groups vying for this.
Yeah, and there's I think when each one has come out, it's been exciting, and everyone has been – it's pure speculation of, oh, well, there's not enough spots. There's enough spots. You want this. You want this.
They have that. They have this. They don't have the funding for this. They don't – yeah, all this stuff. Where's their ownership group? Is it local? Do they have a downtown stadium spot? I mean
– so, yeah, now we know what you need, and – I think people are torn between you don't want it to grow too fast, but also so many of these markets are so exciting. I mean, look at what FC Cincinnati did this year. We know the history in St. Louis. We know the different cities that a lot of different fan groups have wanted to be involved, like Sacramento. And so I think all of this gives you an opportunity to assess it a little bit, and then the league can start to move forward. What I love about what we're seeing with Minnesota and Atlanta is – moving away from the heavy expansion draft and into here's two new franchises with a lot of money to go out and bring more good players into the league.
Yeah.
Not spread the talent in the league thinner, but to bring more talent into MLS, more ideas, more creativity.
Different approaches, as we've seen with Atlanta.
Different regions. So I think that's what's exciting when you look at this is you have a couple of those cities that have teams already. You have a couple of those cities that probably deserve teams and have great fan groups. And I think it's going to be really exciting for everyone in the soccer community.
Not everybody can get a team, though. Here are the three key aspects as laid out by MLS as they're considering top priorities when reviewing the candidates. One, a committed local ownership group with a deep belief in the resources to invest in MLS. They're talking about infrastructure there. That means a stadium. So they need that comprehensive stadium plan to make sure they have the right stadium and the right place for their fans and community. And then finally, market history, showing that you like soccer, that you'll support it, that it's something that's really, really tied in with who you are as a community. So all those things are important to MLS and the guys making these decisions, which are the ownership group. There's a soccer expansion committee there that's been formed to look at all this.
And real quick, Austin, not on that list, was a city that had been rumored by fans but not by any sort of ownership group.
The release says as of this date, so that can change. These things always change. They've got for a while now to get their applications together. Very, very important, though. Look, a big thanks to you for listening to today's show. We had a lot of fun with you talking about, oh, God, expansion draft, expansion teams, free agency, everything else. We're going to take off. We'll see you on Monday. Have a good one, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.